Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So tomorrow morning I'll be off and away for a while, and you know, one of the things that I'd like to emphasize to everybody is paying attention to communal harmony and really you know, making a concerted effort to be working with each other harmoniously, setting a tone whereby it, you know, that you're not distracting each other with things that are really not necessary. I got an email from Jody Palo, and he was just sort of speaking and saying, just in the light of the kind of various conflicts that are going on within our community, just that. Recognizing that when commenting that Bhaiagiri has usually been generally harmonious, it's not always been, but generally. But that one, just looking at the, you know, what's going on, that communal harmony can't be taken for granted or assumed that it's a given. It has to be. It's something that one has to be working at all the time. It's just not a human beings, even well-intentioned, fundamentally good people can still make a mess of it. Can still end up in conflict, and that's it's sad, but it's the reality, and you don't have to look very far to see that or recognize it. I mean, we do it all the time to each other, but it does take an effort to be able to really pay attention to the roots of what does bring harmony, and it's one of the recollections that has come up for me is just remembering the Madhupindika Sutta, where the Brahman Dandapani is comes across the Buddha, and he's a kind of proud and crusty Brahman, and he speaks in a not a very polite way, asking the Buddha, you know, what do you teach, what do you proclaim? And the Buddha answers by saying, you know, I proclaim a doctrine that I'm teaching where there's basically where there's no need to quarrel or be in conflict, and where the perceptions that underlie the tendencies for conflict are dealt with, and of course the Brahman is a very kind of funny description in the suttas, where he sort of puckers up his face and screws up his face, and his forehead has three lines in it, he doesn't get it. Sort of, maybe so, and wanders off. Of course, the Buddha goes back to his monastery in the evening, recounts the conversation that he had with the Brahman Dandapani, and then one of the monks asks, "Well, how does that happen? How can one fulfill a doctrine whether there's no need for conflict and quarreling with anybody in the world, with its gods, its maras, its brahmas, and devas, and humans?" And the Buddha points to the perceptions and tendencies for, I would say, the underlying tendencies for proliferation. And when those perceptions and underlying tendencies for proliferation are dealt with, are relinquished, then the underlying tendency to lust, the underlying tendency to aversion, the underlying tendency to pride, the underlying tendency to views, the underlying tendency to ignorance are relinquished, are fully eradicated, and one dwells liberated and free. So that the tendency for proliferation is the culprit, is the problem. And of course we're not quick enough to recognize proliferation as proliferation. What we see is, I'm right, they're wrong, I want this, I don't want that, it should be this way, it shouldn't be that way. And we get swept up in the proliferation. And we get caught by it, we get hooked by it, we believe in it, we sink our teeth in it, or like Ajahn Chah, where it says, it isn't as if we're like a fish that gets a hook caught in the mouth, we're like a frog that just swallows it right down to his guts. And then we end up in conflict, we end up in difficulty, we end up in... And even if one isn't sort of fighting and quarreling with people, but just not being at ease, not being comfortable, not being... having a feeling of harmony with the world around us, with other people, with ourselves. The root of that is the proliferation. And we get, again, that sense of not being willing to look at the proliferation. We're willing to invest in that proliferation. We're willing to be just sucked into that proliferation and justify it and believe in it and get fooled by it. And all that we reap is suffering, and all that we spread around and contribute to the world around us is suffering. And it's pathetic. And it isn't as if it's just going on out in the world with sort of your ordinary unenlightened lay people. This is everybody, whether it was in a monastery or outside a monastery, in the world or in some sort of spiritual practice. There's this constantly being hooked by the proliferation, and then it ending up in conflict. And whether it's a minor conflict or whether it's a major conflict, the root is still the same. So then in terms of being a practitioner and being a true disciple of the Buddha, the one who takes the Buddha as refuge, then we really have to make that effort to not be hooked by that tendency to proliferation. And of course, really being to just set up the intention and the object of mindfulness as the recognizing when the mind is moving. And what the Buddha points to as the sources of proliferation, desire, views, and the sense of conceit, tanha, ditti, and mana. And tanha, of course, is the various sense of clinging, of grasping, of thirst, craving that we have towards sense objects, and we tend to, the sense objects are the things that we find pleasurable or interesting, and of course when we don't get what we want, we get upset. We don't get the food we want. We don't get the drinks that we want. We don't get it nice and warm when we want it. We don't get the shoes that we want. We don't get the thing, and it's just on a certain level it's so petty, but and especially as monastics, when we're supposed to be focused on contentment and living a life of simplicity, to see and recognize the kind of the petty nature of desire and how we continually get upset or feel thwarted because we're not getting what we want. And of course we're not getting what we want because we're always believing in desire. We're believing in the proliferation of desire. It cranks the mind up, and then we get caught by it. We get hooked by it. And then we end up in conflict. Suddenly we snap at somebody because we haven't got what we wanted. We blame somebody else because we don't get what we want. And so there's a great talk that is a lecturer at Stanford, Robert Sapolsky. He's done about 30 years of research on stress, and in order to study the nature of stress and the physiology of stress, and he studied baboons and in Africa, and they're so close, they're so similar to human beings in what they do. He says it's like the head, sort of the alpha male, sort of beats up on another sort of striving male, that sort of bigger male then sort of lashes out at a female, the female lashes out at somebody else, and some little some little baboon gets trampled. And so it's just like human beings. So they do it. And it's just what. It's just the case. You sort of take it out on somebody else around you, who you can take it out of. And so after studying baboons for 25 or 30 years, he said he really realized that he really didn't like these baboons, and part of it was is that they display so clearly these very human traits that aren't very beautiful. And without a real effort to pay attention and not be drawn in and not get caught in that. And it's that very simple proliferation, the movement of the mind, extending out of the mind of clarity and of stillness or of equanimity. As soon as the mind proliferates with something, the desire, it's setting itself up for some kind of conflict. The same with views and opinions, and not. When the things don't go according to one's view of what's right, how it should be, how it shouldn't be, what's right, what's wrong, what's the proper way to do something, this is the improper way to do things. You know, the view, how we hold those views, and then we end up in conflict. Oh, what value was it to hold that view? Even if it's right, so-called right, if it ends up in conflict, what good is it? How can one justify that? So to be able to recognize how those views are generating conflict, and then when the mind starts proliferating with the view, you can feel it moving in the mind, and if you can't feel it, then you're not paying attention. So and so should be like this. Why isn't the work monk doing this? Why isn't the work monk should be doing it like this? That's a view. And as soon as you start holding to the view, it doesn't mean you can't have a view or an opinion about something, but as soon as you start proliferating with it, as soon as you give it the degree of belief and credence and invest in it, then you've set yourself up for conflict, and there's nothing good comes of it. And same in the sense of mana, the sense of what the Buddha calls conceit. Conceit from the Buddhist perspective is that holding to the sense of just of me in contradistinction, in opposition to something out there, somebody out there, something else out there. And as soon as there's that sense of conceit, whether it's me as somebody who's better than, who's right, who's correct, who's, or me who is worse than, poor me, poor hopeless me, poor stupid me, or whether it's me as equal. I'm just as good as he is. Who does he think he is? I'm just as good. I'm equal. I'm good. It's all. We're all equal here. As soon as you have that position, as me in distinction to others, you set yourself up for suffering. You're setting yourself up for conflict because you're coming from the self position, that sense of mana. And it's only when we can really recognize this is phenomena arising and ceasing. This is conditions coming into being through their causes. And seeing it, that's when we can see it in accordance with Dhamma. As if anything is viewed through the lens of tanha, ditti, mana, the roots of proliferation, then it's going to end up in suffering and conflict. And it has to be seen through the light of Dhamma, in the sense of this is phenomena, these are conditions, these are the arising and passing of the of that which is constructed and of an unstable, impermanent nature. That's what it is, and it doesn't mean one's just writing it off and not and just dismissing it. But it's like that's when you can really look at things from a perspective of balance. And when you can look at things from a perspective of balance, that's when you can start to turn toward that which is actually conducive to harmony. So that really stepping back from that deeply, deeply ingrained habit of the tanha, ditti, mana, proliferation. Letting the proliferation rule how we see, hear, perceive, conceive of ourselves and the world around us. And so then, this is a very, it's on a certain level, it's a very refined aspect of Dhamma. But if you don't refine it down to these fundamentals, then you just end up being running around and being spun out by the world and by one's own internal perceptions and feelings. And one can't expect any kind of harmony from that. So as one is able to really cut the roots of proliferation, seeing that movement of the mind, that complicating of experience, then that's when one can get a handle on it. And when one is able to do that, wherever you go, whoever you're with, you're able to really be at peace with it, be harmonious with it, not in conflict with anything. And that's where one fulfills the Buddha's teachings. So this, these next 2 months, both myself and Ajahn Amaro will be away, so that the monastery will be in the hands of Ajahn Yatiko, Ajahn Sudanto, Ajahn Kurudamo. But it's not just them. It's everybody's responsibility. It's everybody here plays a role, plays a part, and to encourage you all to play the part of contributing to the harmony and well-being of sort of the monastery and your own practice. Because when there is a degree of harmony, then there's practice tends to go smoother. It's just a lot easier to meditate and do the practice when that's the baseline. If it's not there, then there's it tends to be a sort of agitation which distracts one. Just like you all to really be attentive to that and put forth effort so that you reap the fruits of that. On a certain level, it's not, you know, doing it for me or doing it for Ajahn Yatiko or Ajahn Kumudama, you're doing it for yourselves, because that's what you're here for. That's what you've all come to the monastery for. So I encourage you all to take this opportunity and take delight in that. Delight in the opportunity to practice together. Delight in the opportunity to just have the conditions that are conducive to practicing the Dhamma. It's pretty rare in the world to have the conditions that are here. So to really let them bear fruit and allow yourselves to reap the fruit of it. So offer that for reflection to you.
Andamayam dhammapitaya sadhu karam dharma seya.